Perhaps it's time for a reality check on the truth, the priceless knowledge that we have actually been given. And as we go through this, keep in mind that, you know, this information comes from God. It's not something that somebody's made up. So let's have a look at some of the things that are going on in the world today. The Middle East muddle. I mean, this is a famous one. Forget all this world's politics. The truth is in Psalm 83. And it's always been in Psalm 83, and it's always been ignored by the world. This is the real view, and it has not changed for thousands of years. Turn to Psalm 83, if you would. Psalm 83, and verse 1. This is in the New Living Translation. It's a bit easier to understand. O God, be not silent, and do not be deaf. Do not be quiet, O God. Don't you hear the uproar of your enemies? Don't you see your arrogant enemies are rising up? They devise crafty schemes against your people. They conspire against your precious ones. Come, they say, let us wipe out Israel as a nation. We will destroy the very memory of its existence. Isn't that what comes out of Iran on a regular basis? Yes, this is their unanimous decision. They signed a treaty as allies against you. These Edomites and the Ishmaelites, the Moabites, the Hagarites, the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Amalekites, and all the other ites. Lots of ites. All the different Arab races. Verse 8 is interesting. Assyria has joined them too and is allied with the descendants of Lot. Now, that's interesting because Assyria, of course, is Germany, as we all know. But the descendants of Lot is Jordan. And it's just happened very quietly over the last few years. But Germany has established a rather large military base in northern Jordan, which kind of covers the whole Middle East. It's just an interesting thing when we know what's actually going to be coming out. Turn to Isaiah 30. Here's another truth that is somewhat unpalatable to a lot of people, but the truth often is. Isaiah 30 verse 8. Britain and America are going to be suddenly stopped in their tracks. Very suddenly. And there's a very good reason why. Let's have a look at Isaiah 30 verse 8. Again, the New Living Translation. Now go, write it before them in a table, and note it in a book, that it may be for a time to come and forever and ever, that this is a rebellious people, lying children that will not hear the law of God. Kind of interesting, ties in exactly with what Mr. Armstrong was just saying in The World Tomorrow. If we say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. The economy is doing well. The fact that you're paying out 20% more of your money just to live the way you lived last year, don't worry about that. Everything's fine, really. Get you out of the way. Turn out from the path. Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. There's the problem. They don't want God. Headline that you'll see in the news that goes up tomorrow. Britain has just elected the most godless parliament in history. Almost half the MPs refused to take the oath on the Bible, which is quite interesting. Verse 12. Wherefore, says the Holy One of Israel, because you despise this word and trust in oppression and perverseness and stay thereon, therefore this iniquity shall be to you as a breach ready to fall, swelling up as a high wall, whose breaking comes suddenly in an instant. You've ever seen a wall come down? You get a little bit of swaying and so on, but then all of a sudden it's all in a pile. It's over before you can draw breath. And he shall break it as the pieces of a potter's vessel that is broken in pieces. He shall not spare, so there shall not even be found in the bursting a shard to take fire from the hearth or to take water withal out of the pit. In other words, it's shattered into tiny pieces, a complete shattering. And as we'll see, that's kind of hard to take in, isn't it? You know, when you're just driving up to church today, I was just thinking how nice it was. Country's all green, cars in the field, people going about their normal lives. All normal. It's like that all over most of the world at the moment. But for how much longer? Another thing in Revelation 19, you can turn to Revelation 19, verse 7. Again, a verse we all know fairly well. Revelation 19, verse 7. Let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him, for the marriage of the Lamb is come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white, for white linen is the righteousness of the saints. But there is another side to this getting ready, and it's what I want to talk about today. We need to be ready psychologically to handle what's coming. Mentally, ready and aware of oncoming events so that we don't become unglued as this world falls to pieces around us. So today I want to review some events that lead up to the return of Christ and ask the question, are we mentally prepared for what is about to happen? Because you know, all too often, we read these prophecies and we just read over them. We've been doing it for years, 50 years plus for a lot of people. Christ is interesting. When you turn to Matthew 24, another good place to start when you want to deal with a prophecy. Matthew 24, verse 6. You see how Christ progresses now as he's talking to the disciples, right? Verse 6. You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, and these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. In other words, that's a lot of low-level warning. Then he notches up quite a bit. Then the level increases. The intensity increases. Verse 7. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there will be famines, pestilences, earthquakes in diverse places. It's getting a bit heavier, isn't it? And finally, he says, in verse 8, all these are simply the beginning of sorrows. All these, that's just for starters. Who are we talking about? You know, we're talking about earthquakes, we're talking about famines, we're talking about wars, which of course we're surrounded by at the moment. There's famines going on in several places in the world. There's certainly wars going on. There's certainly rumors of wars going on in many places, the latest one being the Philippines. The Chinese are making inroads down there on some islands, and the Filipinos are rejecting rather strenuously. And of course, America's got a pact with the Philippines. If they're attacked, they will attack the attacker. So a war between China and America, yes, very interesting. And then after all that, it goes up another step, verse 21. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was never since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. So this time of trial, this time of tribulation, there's never been anything like it. Now, if you look back in history, you can see, just the Second World War, the way that the Jews were annihilated by the Germans. And it wasn't Jews only, I think the Gypsies are another group that got wiped out, and they didn't take too kindly to anybody of the queer agenda either. They all kind of like disappeared. Around about 6 million of them that we've got recorded. 6 million people just wiped out. And then, of course, you've got the number of people that were wiped out during the war. And you go back to the First World War, and there's millions again getting wiped out. Mindless. I often look at this and think of that saying that somebody said was the generation of lions read by leaders that were donkeys. You know, they would just literally, the men would all rise out of the trenches and literally get mown down, and then they gather all the bodies up, and they would get out of the trenches and have a go at the Germans, and they'd get mown down, and that went on for a year. That went on for a year. The death roll was into the seven figures. Pretty nasty. Go back into history. There's been all sorts of terrible things happen. But none of it. None of it is going to come close to what we're facing in the near future. So after the tribulation, we have in verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of those days, shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Now, we see a lot of this in science fiction movies, don't we? You know, asteroids and things slamming into the earth and all the rest of it. But you know what? It's going to happen. There's one particular one in Revelation. It talks about a mountain burning as fire, landing in the sea. And that's going to cause a little bit of a tsunami, like a very big tsunami. And then shall appear the Son of Man in heaven, and they shall see all the tribes of the earth shall mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And they'll be so happy, won't they? They'll be so happy that the first thing they want to do is destroy him. Because they've been, as Mr. Armstrong said, they've been totally deceived. They've been deceived into believing this is the Antichrist. And then in verse 31, we have the gathering of the elect, which is proving that, you know, God's going to preserve some people through all this mess. Quite incredible, as you'll see in a minute. Verse 31 of Matthew 24. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and he shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. He says, now learn the parable of the fig tree. When this branch is tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is nigh. So likewise, when you see all these things, know that it is near, even at the door. If you've ever watched a fig tree, it just bursts into life. It's quite sudden. We had one, and the birds enjoyed the figs. We never got any. There's a danger that we don't get the scale of the situation that we're approaching right now. Before Christ can return, this world comes to the brink of being totally destroyed. Everything on it's wiped out. Billions of people are going to be killed. We've got 8 billion people on the planet. It says there'll be few men left. Right before his return, whole mountain ranges are going to be flattened. The continents will be reshaped, ready for the millennium. Sounds too fantastic? Revelation 16 verse 18 would beg to differ. Revelation 16 verse 18. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was never since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. That's going to shake things up. Now, just a little side issue here, for all of you who believe Petra's the place of safety. I'm not saying he's not, but it could be interesting. You see, Petra is literally in the Great Rift Valley. The Great Rift Valley is a fault line that starts up in Turkey, goes all the way across Turkey, all the way down Israel, right during the center of Israel, through the Red Sea, into Africa, and it goes right down the middle of Africa, right down as far as Malawi. Lake Malawi is actually on that fault line. If you come up that fault line, if you fly up that, you can see it. You can see, it's like somebody's taking a giant Stanley knife to a map and just draw a line down. Lake Victoria is on the side of that, and so on. Up in North Africa, and you never hear much about this, up in North Africa there's a whole stack of volcanoes, and they're constantly spewing out lava, but we don't worry about them because nobody's there. It's just barren land. That is very active, that Rift Valley. That's where the huge earthquake came in the time of Uzziah. Jerusalem's right on that fault line. So you can see it's going to get pretty hectic. It's going to shake. We're going to feel the earth. If we are in Petra, we're going to feel the earth shake. Might not be too good an idea to be in a cave at the time either, so the mountains are all going to do a bit of a disappearing act. Verse 20, Revelation 16. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. It would appear the earth's crust, the tectonic plates on which the continents sit, literally are moved around. And they've been moved around before, because India is the classic example. where the actual landmass of India was thrust up into Asia, and where the contact is, you've got this basically like almost a horseshoe right across the top of India, and it's called the Himalayas. And I mean, some of those mountains are Everest, what, 29,000 feet? That was quite a collision. It wasn't gentle at all. And for those people who don't believe in that kind of disaster, you tell me why you find seashells on Mount Everest. Quite interesting. Also embarrassing if you're trying to explain things in a different way. Let's turn to Isaiah 24. This gives us a little bit of an insight to what's actually going on in this period. Isaiah 24. Verse 1. Behold, the Lord makes the earth empty, makes it waste, and turns it upside down, and scatters abroad the inhabitants thereof. That doesn't sound too good. A bit of the old Tohu and Bohu returning. Turns it upside down. Maybe the poles will be reversed. Who knows? Verse 3. The Lord, the land shall be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled, for the Eternal has spoken this word. You'll see this all the way through. God saying, I'm doing this. I'm actually doing this. Even when he's got another nation doing the dirty work for him, he's organizing it. It's part of his plan. Verse 6. Therefore the cursed devour the earth, and they that dwelt thereon are desolate. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned. If you remember the one prophecy talks about the sun and the heat from the sun in becoming three or four times as hot. The inhabitants of the earth are burned. A few men left. Few men left. Verse 19. The earth is utterly broken down. The earth is clean dissolved. The earth is moved exceedingly. The New Living Version translates that as, the earth has broken up. It has utterly collapsed. It is violently shaken. You know, have you ever tried, I did it this morning by mistake, you get condensation in the inside of the kettle. It's a glass thing. And I just give the water a shake to get rid of the condensation. Then you pick the kettle up when the water is actually still revolving, and the kettle's doing this. Quite interesting. If we understand correctly, the part of all this is going to result in the earth slowing back down to a 360-day journey around the sun, which will give us a perfection in the actual calendar. That's the way it used to be before the flood. The flood, evidently, was not just a matter of water rising up, water going down. It was a lot more violent than that, evidently. Verse 20, the earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard, and shall be removed like a cottage. The King James English. Let's put it into modern English. The earth staggers like a drunk. It trembles like a tent in a storm. We just put a gazebo up in our back garden, which is really an act of great faith in Wales, particularly where we live. And I was just looking at it the other day, we had a few gusts of wind, and the whole thing was designed to flex, let's put it that way. Might end up in Aberystwyth trying to get it back when it gets blown away. One of the key things we've got to keep in mind, I'm always keeping in mind, this is not our world. We are observers. We are not the problem, we are part of the solution. And this is the key to keeping mental sanity. Realizing that what's going on, we're not involved with it. We're just literally here to watch. Because, you know, we're just talking in the car coming out. And Alec mentioned, it's always interesting that history is always written by the victor. Because obviously they're the only ones left. And in this upcoming disaster, we'll be writing the history, because we'll know the history, because we'll be able to pull out people from different ages. You can't really argue with Abraham if he's standing in front of you, and so forth. So Again, we're not involved. We're simply, I know it's hard to say, we're not involved. We are literally observing. We have God's truth. We can understand what is about to happen. God has revealed his plan to us. This world and its satanic system is going to be totally destroyed. And you know, when you start thinking about teaching people in the millennium, it gets pretty basic. You know, we've got to teach them the new names for the days of the week. We've got to teach them new names for the weeks of the month. We've certainly got to teach them new names for the months of the year. Because there won't be, we won't be having Saturn's day as the Sabbath. That just simply won't be, you know, won't be allowed. That's pretty basic. Before you get into relationships and money, weights and measures and all the other things that make a society tick. We are about to witness the greatest catastrophe ever to hit the earth. And Christ makes no bones about it. Verse 21 of Matthew 24, and you know, we read it. There will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time. No, never shall be. He's not joking. Jeremiah 30, verse 7, just make a note of it. Jeremiah even records the same thing. Alas, for that day is great, so that none like it, even the time of Jacob's trouble. But he shall be saved out of it. A little tiny remnant will be saved out of it. Now, in the face of all this, here's what Christ has to say to us. John 14:27. And this is a little, after we've just gone through, what we've just gone through, this is a bit hard to swallow. John 14:27. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you, not as the world gives, give I to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. In all this, while we're watching, we have to have this confidence that what we're watching is God's final part of God's plan for this era is coming to an end. And we've been given a list of exactly what's going to happen. And we're going to be watching it. We're going to be able to verify it. We'll always be a witness. Jesus is well aware how we think. He specifically encouraged us to see that you not be troubled in Matthew 24. He's just talked about wars, rumors of wars, pestilences, earthquakes, volcanoes, and all the rest. All the disasters you could possibly think of. And he says, see you don't be troubled. Don't be anxious. It takes a bit of thinking about this, doesn't it? Luke 21:36 is the scripture we often read, but let's read it again. Luke 21:36. Watch therefore and pray always that you will be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. So, what do we have to do? Well, to those who are watching and praying as a way of life, to those who have kept his word, to those who have not denied his authority, his name, to those who sigh and cry over all the abominations in the land, to those who are poor and of a contrite spirit and tremble at his words, to those Christ gives this promise. Revelation 3, verse 10. Again, you know it very, very well. Because you have kept the word of my patience, because you've believed me, you believe me. I gave you the plan and you've stuck with it and you've witnessed it. I also will keep you from the hour of temptation or trial which will come upon the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. Notice it's not just Israel. It's the whole world that's into this period. It's the whole world. What's coming up in the immediate future? And it might be a bit more immediate than we think, as this world system is totally and utterly trashed, destroyed, plowed over. It's got to be, because what's coming up is so dramatically different to what we've got at the moment. They can't live side by side. And I've mentioned this before. We had a question down in South Africa in a graduate club as to what could we take through from this society. What would you like to, you know, could you, if somebody says, well, I'd like my computer. But there was various other suggestions. But you know, apart from this book that we've got, which basically is not just God's way, but it's also a bit of a history of the 6,000 years of mankind, nothing else matters. None of it is of any use. None of it. You look at the systems we've got today, it's coming more and more evident. These mega companies are dictating what we eat. They dictate what we believe. They dictate what we are. And they've got all sorts of ways of imposing their will on us. And you wonder, well, you know, what's motivating these people? Well, the answer is, whose world is it? End of the age events. Matthew 24, verse 14. This is the famous one. Because this happened. We were there. We witnessed it. Matthew 24, verse 14. This gospel of the kingdom of God shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Job done. Completed January 1986. When you look at those last few years with Mr. Armstrong going all over the world, talking to so many leaders, and we had people saying, oh, well, you know, they paid for this. They didn't have enough money, sloshing the money around so they could get influence. Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. I was involved in the news there for 7 years. And you know, to get an interview with anybody of any importance in today's world is a monumental job. When Prince Charles was or King Charles as he is now, was invested as Prince of Wales, it took us best part of 6 months to get that organized, to make sure we had the position, to make sure we had the pass, to get into the right area so we could stand and get the right photograph and so on. 6 months. You look at in some of the interviews, I mean, how the envoy was given to King Leopold, for example. That's a miracle. You for all the tea in China, you could not organize that. Never. To get to China, Mr. Armstrong one time was in Japan, sitting outside the Prime Minister's office. And along them was an American trade delegation who were sort of next in line, and they came out and took Mr. Armstrong and left the trade delegation in their city. You know, these things just don't happen. They don't happen, believe me. God has to be behind this whole thing. To get to communist China? Incredible. And all that when he was in his 80s. There's hope for some of us yet. Let's look at where we are today, because we find ourselves in a very interesting situation. There's a lot of things going on which have started a lot of red lights flashing. Luke 21, verse 20. Luke 21, verse 20. And when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, know then that the desolation thereof is nigh. Now, linked to that, and this is the big thing that Mr. Armstrong was given, is given an understanding of linking Daniel with Matthew 24 and the book of Revelation. Because the symbols are all explained within those three sets of scriptures. The one I feel really sorry for, well, the two men involved, John, the Apostle John, who was the scribe writing down what he was told to write for the book of Revelation, and then poor old Daniel, who was an amazing person, ruled Babylon for many years, and he was second in command for longer than he could think. In the end, he had to say, well, what's going on? Show me, tell me. And all he got was, you've done your job. Rest in peace. in the required time, you'll receive your reward. Boom. Never understood half the stuff he was writing. And yet, he was given the key to the basic thing of the succession of the Babylonians and the Persians, the Greeks, and then the Romans. And you see all, and it all ties in with the beast and all the rest of it in Revelation. But again, Revelation, go back to Daniel 12. Well, it's quite a different world back then, mind you, but there you go. Quite amazing. Daniel 12, verse 11. From the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1,335 days, or 1,335 to us. Long-winded way of doing things in King James English. Now, the best thing I can do here, I think, is read from Mr. Armstrong's Pastor General's report. And it's the only place you'll find this information. So all ye who are throwing Mr. Armstrong on the rubbish pile of history, you're doing yourself a great disservice. Because there are some things that you only find in one place. And this is one of them. Mr. Armstrong, writing about the daily sacrifices, he explains. He said, but Daniel 12, verse 11, from the time the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, consider this a moment. This does not imply a material temple to be built in our time, which is, of course, what the Jews want, or some of the Jews want. It does seem to imply the Israelis may restore the twice daily sacrifice, possibly at the Wailing Wall. The indication is the armies of the beast, Revelation 17, entering Jerusalem, will stop this daily sacrifice and the abomination that makes desolate set up. And then he goes into what is this abomination, because it's been rather misunderstood over the years. This refers to Daniel 11:31 and Matthew 24:15. In Daniel 11:31, the armies of Antiochus Epiphanes were in Jerusalem, and some commentators have interpreted it as Antiochus placing a statue of Jupiter in the Holy of Holies in the temple. He might have done that, but that's not the problem. A statue does not make desolate. It stands there, minding its own business. Not only does Matthew 24:15 also refer to this, but in the parallel New Testament scripture, Luke 21:20, speaks the same thing as Jerusalem compassed by armies. This is the correct meaning of this abomination. It is the armies, not the statue, that make Jerusalem desolate. Now, once you understand that, that opens up the prophecy then to understanding. Without that, you're busy looking for somebody running around with some sort of a statue to put into a temple that's not there. Because as a matter of interest, if you go back into Ezra and Nehemiah's time, you'll see that when they got back into the land to rebuild the temple, one of the first things they did was start the morning and evening sacrifices on, I believe, the Feast of Trumpets, if I remember correctly. 19 years later, they got down to sorting the foundation out of the temple. So there was no temple around for a long time, but the sacrifices were going on. So there would be nothing wrong today in them starting the sacrifices without a temple. Never before have we understood these periods of 1260, 1290, and 35 days. But it seems evident now a blessing is pronounced on us, God's church, who wait and endure until the 1335 days, approximately 1335 days prior to Christ's coming. But since no man can know the day or the hour of his coming, we probably shall not be able to know the exact day that this 1335 begins. However, we are given a lot of clues. It's the ending of it that's the question, because it says the day is shortened, and we don't quite know which days are shortened, but it's obviously at some stage, probably right towards the end, when man's getting ready to blow himself off the planet. But apparently, now here's the information that's so valuable. Apparently, this is the time when our work shall end. How easy is that today to just shut the websites down? When you're a government, that is. This will be the time when the united Europe shall appear, the revival of the medieval Holy Roman Empire. That's when we'll see the Europeans and the Pope getting together. And you know what? There's nothing new about it. It happened back in 2017. You can go back in our news and you'll see it all happening. They were going into a big meeting to decide the future of Europe, and before they did that, they went to the Pope for spiritual guidance, because he was regarded as being, you know, the spiritual guide. He's also been involved at the United Nations, hinting that we need a world religion, with, of course, me at the head of it, as he says. We shall be warned and ready to be taken to a place of refuge and safety from the great tribulation. You can make of that what you want. But you know what? Let's be honest. If you woke up in the morning and you saw in the news that this afternoon the new leader in Germany was going straight down to the Pope, and they were looking at a revival of the Holy Roman Empire, I think we'd be jumping up and down, wouldn't we? Sorry. That's when you start clapping, because you just know where you are. You know exactly where you are. 45 days later, the beast's armies will surround Jerusalem. Now, one thing I've got to point out here. We often talk about things happening suddenly. And you'll see a few of the examples in a minute. But all this stuff takes place within just over a month. From the getting together of the Holy Roman Empire to that army cutting off those sacrifices is a month for 45 days. 6 weeks. Just 6 weeks. Look at what's going to happen that period of time. You know, you don't move an army. We've seen this before. Like when they went into Kuwait. I think it took the Americans 2 or 3 months before they could mount a serious challenge to the problem. It's a lot of stuff you've got to lug around. And the Germans, of course, are very good at doing things quickly. That was witnessed in the Second World War, their blitzkrieg type thing. They got to advance so quick that the supply line couldn't keep up with them. 45 days later, the beast armies surround Jerusalem. 30 days later, the Great Tribulation will probably start, with a nuclear attack on London and Britain, and possibly the same day or immediately after the United States and Canadian cities. We'll have a look at that in a minute. The Great Tribulation, we will then fully realize, is the time of Jacob's trouble, spoken of in Jeremiah 30, verse 7, and Jacob's name was named on Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. As we see in a minute, we're looking at Ephraim's sickness and Judah's wound, but in actual fact, the book of Hosea is actually aimed at Israel, all of it. While this most terrible tribulation has happened to our people, shall we in God's church be protected? My son Garnet here is now scoffing in derision at our being taken to a place of safety during the Great Tribulation, as are a large proportion of the church today. Why? Well, God couldn't do that, could he? You don't ever say that. You really don't ever want to be saying that. Because some of the stuff he's going to be doing is looking like totally, totally, totally impossible. The impossible he does straight away, and the miracles follow very quickly afterwards. Because he's in total control. Does Revelation 3 verse 10 mean what it says? Mr. Armstrong writes, because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of trial or temptation that shall come upon the world to try them that dwell on the earth. Just as the Egyptians or the Israelites at the time of the trial, they underwent the first three plagues, I think it was. But after that, the war went up. The rest the Egyptians took. They didn't happen to the Israelites, which was to prove to both parties who was in charge and who was in total control. Also, Revelation 12, verse 14, shows the church being flown into the place of safety in the wilderness. After this, Revelation 12, 17, Satan will make war with the remnant of the Laodicean church, and this leads up to Christ's coming. He writes, so where are we now in the panorama of prophecy? Now, this is written 30 or 40 years ago, but you know what, in prophetic times, that's nothing. It could happen suddenly, leaving the whole world aghast in wonder. The whole world is now on fire. And that's the Pastor General's report of the 20th of November 1979. If you haven't read it, it's on the website. Do. It's got priceless knowledge in it. Now, the question we've got is, could this be as a result of the worldwide financial collapse that Mr. Armstrong predicted would cause the uniting of Europe? You know, if the whole financial system crashes, and isn't it interesting in the background now we've got all this computerized stuff ready to take over, a new financial system could go in pretty quick. Yeah. That's when you've got to have the number and all the rest of it. They've got your details, they've got all your information, they know who everybody is in the Western world because Facebook, I believe, have just dumped all their information into an AI computer, as does everybody else. They know everything about everybody. If they wanted a dossier on any of us, it could be 30, 40 pages with no effort. So could it be a financial collapse? That's not the question. The situation is, these 10 nations get together. How is the answer, the question? Revelation 17, verse 17. And this scripture explains a whole load of problems. Revelation 17, verse 17. For God has put in their hearts to fulfill His will, to agree and to give their kingdom to the beast until the word of God shall be fulfilled. Boom. God is in total, absolute and utter control of everything, and He will bring His plan to fruition. We can have absolute confidence in this. No matter what happens, and what happens to us, this is going to happen. You can't not. Now, another thing about looking at prophecy, as Mr. Armstrong pointed out in Ezekiel, quote, at that time a third of the people of our nations will die, or shall have died with famine and disease epidemics. Another third will die in the war, a city is being destroyed, and the remaining third carried away into the land of our enemies as slaves, Ezekiel 5. It's easy to overread this prophecy, but it means that over 100 million people in America are going to be killed in the war, straight off. And over another 100 million plus are going to die very shortly thereafter of famine and pestilence. Think about the numbers. 360 million probably now with all the new members of the country. Over 100 million people wiped out very quickly. Could even be within 1 or 2 days. In the UK, 25 million would die of the famine, while 25 million would die in the war. Just as the ancient Israelites suffered under the first three plagues, we shall experience some of these end time events. But note, the faithful are removed to a place of safety before these main events. Most of these events happen suddenly. Just check now, Isaiah 9, verse 14. You want suddenly? We'll give you suddenly. Isaiah 9, verse 14. Therefore the Eternal will cut off from Israel head and tail, branch and rush, in one day. Boom. That's it. The ancient and honorable, he is the head, and the prophet that teaches lies, he is the tail. For the leaders of this people cause them to err, and they that are led of them are destroyed. Interesting that this is the most godless parliament we've ever had in this country. How could all this happen? This is where it gets very interesting. Here's the warning Mr. Armstrong gave back in 1982. Co-worker letter, April the 21st, 82. In addition to terrorist groups, experts fear that unstable regimes in various countries could also get the bomb. An unbalanced third world dictator with a nuclear device could kill millions. The new Stalin or Hitler is a major nation would have the stock car to literally obliterate the entire human race. That would only at the moment include America, Russia, and possibly China. But there's a word of caution when we look at these prophecies. For example, as Ezra 6 says, all your dwelling places, the cities shall be laid waste. That's the prophecy. All cities destroyed, right? The high places made desolate, your altars will be laid waste, made desolate, all your idols broken and cease, and your images cut down, and your works may be abolished. Your works, your whole society is abolished. That's what's coming. Remember, Ezekiel wrote this prophecy, but he was in captivity. He couldn't even get to Israel to give them the warning. It's for us today, as Mr. Armstrong pointed out. Key point, the cities are destroyed. It doesn't say how. Mr. Armstrong was writing back in 1982, the only way to destroy whole cities was by using nuclear weapons. America has around 350 cities with more than 100,000 inhabitants. So to fulfill this prophecy, it would take at least 350 nuclear bombs. Who can do that today? Russia. China's not even there yet. Europe doing it? It's a joke. I think they've got about 20 nuclear things there and they belong to America anyway. At least that we know about. It's interesting also, the prophecy starts with famine, then war, then captivity. In the normal course of events in the modern time, that's how it goes. You have the war, which leads to a famine. Back in those days, they would have a siege, and you'd have the famine, and then they'd go in and mop up what was left. But it's just an interesting point. Today, we have an unbalanced third world dictator. In fact, we've got a couple of them. The one is Mr. Kim Jong-un, has just tested a solid-fuel, hypersonic, intercontinental ballistic missile, and he already has the nuclear warheads to stick on it. Iran also is an unbalanced nation, constantly calling for Israel to be destroyed. They seem to be on the brink of getting atomic weapons. Now they've linked up with Russia. It shouldn't be too difficult for them to get hold of some bombs. If he could explode a nuclear bomb high above the US, the US would almost be totally destroyed. Electromagnetic pulse generated by the explosion would take out everything in the US, which has a computer chip on it. And as we'll see, a bit more than the US even. Now, some people are concerned about this. This is Dr. Peter Pry, who is the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. So he's way up there. He's in the boss's office. He warns of the consequences of not being prepared for this event are much more severe than one might think. Just listen to the numbers. Within a year of an EMP event, at least two-thirds of the U.S. population will perish from starvation, disease, and social collapse. Interesting, isn't it? Former CIA double agent Raza Khalili, who spent time in the Iranian army, confirmed that the Iranians have conducted missile tests on ships in the Caspian Sea, which are consistent with an EMP attack. They're going to get to the Gulf of Mexico with ballistic missiles, and they can launch one at a moment's notice, and they wouldn't care about the repercussions, mostly because they can simply sink the vessel, leaving no traces, and because the U.S. won't be able to retaliate anyway. North Korea can do the same thing. The problem we've got today is they've got all these early warning things. Somebody coughs in Russia, and it shows up on their computer in the States. And they can see them actually being launched, and see missiles being launched. The problem here is, if they put that thing on a ship, and they get into the Persian Gulf, all that missile's got to do is shoot up 250, 300 miles into the atmosphere and bang. You haven't got time to shoot it down. It's not possible. It takes a little while to fire up. The American missiles, evidently, are mainly liquid-filled, and you can't fill them up until the last minute. So, yeah, these will be solid state. You put the thing up, press the button, and run. And it's all over. It would be virtually impossible to shoot this missile down. The strongest nation by far in today's world is vulnerable to being destroyed by a bunch of terrorists, by a nation that can't even feed its own people, that has got nuclear weapons, which is what we've got in North Korea. The day after, what if you woke this morning and nothing worked? What if there was no electricity? What if all transportation came to a halt? An EMP event would instantly destroy any means of telecommunications, bank accounts would disappear, planes would fall out of the skies, nuclear plants would not be able to cool down the reactors, which means they'd blow up. We have no running water because the water pumps wouldn't work, and every piece of electronics we use, from pacemakers to phones to gasoline pumps, would stop. What are all the modern kids going to do when all their phones won't work? Oh! Your refrigerator will stop working, and all your food will spoil in a matter of days. And if you and your family are not together, you won't be able to contact or see them. This is a catastrophic threat, and North Korea, China, Russia, even ISIS are all understand this and are working on it. If they were ever to wage a war on us, they would be stupid not to strike at America's Achilles heel. One rocket, one bomb, end of story. And all the cities are destroyed. Very quickly. All of them. And the villages. And the farms. Because the farmer sits today in his office and has a computer screen in his mouth. And he controls a tractor running up and down fields that are miles and miles long. All because he's got GPS satellites, which of course will all have been fried by this explosion. If one of the nuclear power blasts a nuclear weapon 275 miles above the US, it will produce an EMP that will basically send us, the Canadians and the Mexicans, back into the dark ages. What is the US doing to prevent an EMP attack right now? Absolutely nothing. The worst place to be in this event, of course, is a city. And, you know, we look at the destroyer. It could be Iran. It could be North Korea. Or it might be somebody else. Turn to Leviticus 26. Leviticus 26, verse 32. Yes! I myself will devastate your land, and your enemies who come to occupy it will be appalled at what they see. Interesting few points there, isn't there? God, just the same God that said in Revelation 17, I changed their mind, I made them get together to fulfill my plan. Here he's saying, I will devastate your land, and your enemies who come to occupy it will be appalled at what they see. I will scatter you among the nations and bring you my sword against you. Your land will become desolate and your cities will lie in ruin. That's the New Living Translation version. Could it be that the European army comes over as a rescue mission? Just a question. That's a new doctrine. Just makes you wonder. It does make you wonder because there's no discernible destruction to a bomb like that. It's just that everything we've got simply would stop working. Or there'd be some things drag on for a few days while your little home generators and until your mobile phone battery finally died. But of course the mobile phone wouldn't work because the relay station's blown. Yeah, it's God says it here. I myself will devastate your land. That's where the devastation comes from. One of the prophecies that's getting a lot of attention right now can be found in Daniel 11:31. I say the book of Daniel is full of prophecy. Verse 31, and arms shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and they shall take away the daily sacrifice. That's the key. Now, without getting into too much of a discussion here, I think it's pretty safe to say that if they're going to take away the daily sacrifice, it's going to be there. It can't take it away if it ain't there. And it's the army, of course, that surrounds Jerusalem that makes Jerusalem desolate. The main purpose, we're told, of that army is to go down there and stop those sacrifices. Why? We have to ask a question. Why? If you don't look the right way on the Temple Mount, you can start a riot. What did they start doing this sacrifice of this red heifer? What's going to be the resulting furore in the Arab world? What's going to be the result when they start the morning and evening sacrifices? Israel's going to be attacked on all sides. Israel can only respond in that case in one way: tactical nuclear weapons, of which they've got quite a good store. That's when the Europeans come down to stop the fight, to squidge it. And the way to do that, to take the sacrifice away. That would seem fairly obvious, but of course, is anything obvious when God's doing it? Except that those sacrifices have got to start, those sacrifices stop, and they stop when that army surrounds Jerusalem. That's cast iron. That's rock. You can prove that in the Bible dead easy. The thing is, some people say, "Oh, I wouldn't be fleeing anywhere unless this happens or that happens." You've got to be very careful with that, because once the army's in place, for instance, until Jerusalem is surrounded by armies. One man told me this: I definitely wouldn't flee until that Jerusalem is surrounded by armies. I said, "There's a problem with that. It's talking to the people in Jerusalem. If Jerusalem's surrounded by armies, you're not going to be able to flee." Ooh, I hadn't thought of that. We need to be awake. We need to be watching. If we are in Jerusalem, might be good if you check the news and you can see that there's an army coming. That would be the time to pack your bags and get out. Not when it's surrounded Jerusalem. And now we come to a cow, which is how people are mocking it. The red heifer. It's in place. It's chosen. The altars can be assembled in 24 hours, so we are told. The land on which the sacrifice has got to be is something about being line of sight of with the Temple Mount on the Mount of Olives and all the rest of it. A rich Jewish gentleman has brought himself a nice big plot of land there so they can plot the altar there. They're in exactly the right place. They've got all the priests and all the paraphernalia required, except the ashes of the red heifer, apparently. But, yeah, it's all lined up, ready to go. So we need to watch what's happening there. The big thing, of course, is that the ashes would be required before they could build the third temple. And of course, this is what the Jews really want. I doubt it's going to happen somehow. However, Christian religious leaders have been on the alert, describing this sacrifice as madness. A declaration signed April the 8th this last year by 36 religious figures from Jerusalem and around the world denounced it as an invitation to regional and even global war. You know, there's 1. Whatever it is, billion Muslims around the world and 7 million Jews. It's kind of one-sided. I've heard of David and Goliath, but that's just pushing the bounds a little bit. And yet, there are Jews in Jerusalem right at the very end when Christ returns. They flee by the valley, as you did in the days of Uzziah and Zechariah there. It says that it will transform the Israeli-Palestine situation from political conflict into a religious conflict without a terrestrial solution. In other words, the solution would have to come from the non-terrestrial world, because they don't use the word God, do they? That would be terrible. The Temple Institute intends to start conducting sacrifices and offerings very shortly after priests are made ritually clean by the ashes of the red heifer. That will cause a major stir, the article said. That is the most massive understatement of the world for a long time. Another prophecy is interesting. where are we? Let's see. Ephraim's sickness and Judah's wound. This is Hosea. Back to Hosea. As I say, the book of Hosea is written, it seems to be written primarily to Ephraim, but again, it talks about Ephraim and Israel, and it talks about Jacob and so on. So it's about the whole of modern-day Israel, in actual fact. These events would seem to happen round about the 1335 day. I'll show you why. Hosea 5 verse 5. The pride of Israel, note, not just Ephraim, the pride of Israel does testify to his face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. Judah also shall fall with them. Right? Verse 13. When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jareb, yet he could not heal you nor cure you of your wound. They went to the Assyrian, note. The Assyrian, just make a note of Isaiah 10 verse 5. O Assyrian, the rod of my anger and the staff of their hand is mine indignation. This is the man God will use to lead that whole, you know, the army. Could the wound be caused as a result of the sacrifices? Whatever it is, that army goes charging down to stop the sacrifices. So, the beast must be around at this time because they go to the Assyrian. This Jareb, it means he will contend, is a symbolic name again for Assyria. Why do they go to Germany for help? Why don't they go to the US? Interesting question. This could occur before the 1335 day mark if the Assyrian is ruling in Germany prior to the 10 nations joining up. It may be we get the ruler and he's around for a while and then he goes down to the Pope. It could also happen on the same kind of like day the way things happen these days. What's Ephraim's sickness? The word sickness, it means a malady, it means anxiety, it means calamity, it means disease, it means grief. It means just plain sick. Now what is Ephraim or Israel's sickness? Turn to Ezekiel 9 verse 4. I'll show you what Ezekiel's sickness is. Ezekiel 9 verse 4. All the abominations that be done in the midst thereof, iniquity, lawlessness. This is what the sickness is. This is what we sigh and cry for, as Mr. Bowles brought out in the sermon just the other week. It's for all the abominations done in the land, right? Put that in with the gaslighting update that I did, and then you start seeing something interesting, right? Start with over 1 million abortions in the last 12 months in America. 12 million. 250,000 in Britain, exactly the same proportion to the population. This is gaslighting on a disgusting scale. The people are told that abortion is a form of birth control, and they've been totally deceived into believing it. In God's eyes, it's murder. It's causing your children to go before the fire of Moloch. Only today they just throw them into an incinerator. Abominations? You bet it's an abomination. Hosea 4 verse 1. Hear the word of the Eternal, O people of Israel. The Lord has brought charges against you, saying, there is no faithfulness, no kindness, no knowledge of God in your land. Oh, just read the daily news. Guy gets upset and shoots all of his family with a crossbow. Another man's apprehended going across the bridge in Bristol carrying a suitcase, and there's two dead bodies in there. I believe they've now found some more dead bodies. So there's obviously been a whole wipe out there. We'll find out about much later. America, it's so many shoot-ups and all the rest of it happening there that they don't even make the news. They don't even worry unless there's at least 6 or 8 people being killed. It's just ridiculous. You make vows and break them. You kill and steal and commit adultery. 55% of all the people living together in Britain are not married. So we have a whole generation of bastard children. That is an abomination before God. I keep reminding of it. I keep saying to you, how long will this smell go into your nostrils when you look at this lot? Absolutely horrible. That is why your land is in mourning and everyone is wasting away. Even the wild animals, the birds of the sky and the fish of the sea are disappearing. And don't we hear about that all the time? When I was a kid, I know you used to walk down the country lane, the back of our house, and there's birds everywhere. We used to run through the wheat field and shout that the sparrows would just take off, and they almost blocked the sun out. There were so many of them. We've now got a family in our back garden of mummy and daddy, and they've just had, they've fledged two lots already, actually, so we've got a dozen babies. That's what we've got in our back garden now. Unbelievable. With the arrival of that European army, I was going to say peace could be restored, but I think we'd rather say the war might be ended. But you can imagine there's just going to be turmoil there like you can't believe. And with the Pope in there and stirring, And of course, Edom and Moab escape all this. Turkey's a funny nation. They're running around with Russia on one hand and a member of NATO over the other. So if NATO stationed their atomic weapons in Turkey, which they have, then the Russians have got access to them to find out how they work. The world has lost it, quite frankly. It's just lost it completely. It's just not a good time to be a world leader in Israel. Turn to Isaiah 9. Just trying to give you a flavor of the world that we've got and the world that's coming. We're almost there. Isaiah 9 verse 13. For the people turns not into him that smites them. In other words, God. They do not seek the Eternal of hosts. Therefore the Lord will cut off from Israel head, tail, and branch and rush in one day. The ancient and honorable, he is the head, and the prophet that teaches lies, he is the tail. For the leaders of this people cause them to err, and they that are led by them are destroyed. I know we've read it before, that's why I read it again. Because remember, God is in total, absolute control. You know, when you read the context, let's go back to Revelation 17 briefly here. Read the section, the emphasis tends to be on verses 12 and 13. The ten horns which you saw were ten kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast. Again, it's a short time frame. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. And generally speaking, in years gone by, I've heard this in sermons, that's where the stop comes. And off we go on to the next bit. But we need to read down a bit. What can cause this great surge of unity? Verse 17 of Revelation 17, the very easy scripture to remember. For God has put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdoms unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. You see, God has a plan and it can't be thwarted. It's that simple. We see another example in 2 Thessalonians 2, of God's direct involvement. This man will come to do the work of Satan with counterfeit powers and signs of miracles. I think this is a Living Translation. He will use every kind of evil deception to fool those who are on their way to destruction because they refuse to love and accept the truth that would have saved them. That's why I wrote the update this week. The one thing that could save everybody is truth. But truth doesn't exist anymore. It's lying dead in the street. Everybody loves the lie. And they've been conned. They've been deceived into believing the lie. It says, yet they refuse to love and accept the truth that would save them. For God will cause them to be greatly deceived. They will believe these lies. Then they will be condemned for enjoying evil rather than believing the truth. And then, you know, a bombshell that Mr. Armstrong dropped on people some years back. He said, do you think so great a fall could not come to so great of powers as Britain and America? God says, I will break the pride of your power. The United States has stopped winning wars. What America was unable, with all its vast power, to conquer North Korea and North Vietnam, and today we can add Iraq, Libya, Syria, and Afghanistan. And not only did we get kicked out of Afghanistan, we left them with something like $200 billion worth of armaments. That group there is the best armed group of terrorists on the planet. And Mr. Armstrong says this, and he said, you know, the United States is fast riding to the greatest fall that ever befell any nation. The handwriting is on the wall. That's where we are now. The red heifer is ready to be sacrificed. The red heifer needs to be sacrificed fairly soon, because it's got to be red. Couple of white hairs and it's out, and they spent several million dollars making sure they've got them without any deflects and so on. So that's got to happen sometime soon. We're not looking at 10 or 15 years. It'll be hamburgers before then. We're looking fairly soon, and we need to be watching very, very carefully. I want to end up with one scripture, because this, to me, is what we got to look at. Turn to Isaiah 19. This is what God is working towards. This is the end result of 6,000 years of his plan. This is what he is going for. Nobody seems to understand. They say, oh, we're destroying all these people and billionaires. They're all going to be resurrected. They're all going to have a chance to be in the family of God. But for the beginning of the millennium, this is what God wants. Isaiah 19, verse 23. In that day, there shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrians shall come to Egypt, and the Egyptian into Assyria, and the Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. In that day, Israel will be a third with Egypt and Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, say, listen to this, in spite of all the mess today and everything else, blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. See that you be not troubled. The words of God will be fulfilled.